Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello and welcome back to another episode. This one is brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, look, Valencia just went down. Matt and I guess, pretty much a live reaction, mate, to the races. Watch them this morning and let's get our teeth stuck into them, because obviously quick races out the front on the men's and women's side, and also some great British performances as well. So as always, we expect that, right?
Mate, we do. And I guess actually with the weather being a little warmer than usual in Valencia, and quite surprisingly, you know, plenty of national records came out of Valencia, but we didn't have any blistering time. I mean, 2:14 on the women's front side and Career getting a win and just looking very, very strong 2:2 for him. Like, they are very, very good marathon times, some of the fastest you'll see all year. But nothing like blistering, getting ever closer to those insane world records. And perhaps that's what we're going to see more of over the next few years in the marathon, is a lot more consistent sort of 2:02s and that becoming the sort of norm winning time, potentially some 2:01, 2:02s. But what you are seeing is still a heap of national records, you know, on the men's side around that 2:04, 2:05 mark, and then obviously on the women's side that 2:20 mark, and people trying to get ever closer to those sort of barriers. And I think 2:05 is definitely a big barrier on the men's side still, and obviously on the women's 2:20 is like that golden barrier as well.
How long do you think it's going to be, mate, until we, I guess, it settles down with the national records? Because I almost feel like it's obviously a combination of the shoes and some of the other tech and the nutrition and maybe slight changes in training, everyone getting out to these fast races and then being paced really well. But at some point, surely it's going to have to settle and to the point where a national record becomes like a massive deal again. Not that it's not, I'm sure these athletes still feel a lot of pride, but when your national record gets broken every year, for example, it's not got the same kind of like royalty around it.
I think the reason national records are getting hammered frequently and being challenged is because each country has three or four men or women who can actually achieve and shoot for that national record. And I think that's why we're just seeing a constant sort of just turnover of these times. And, you know, you look at the Brits now, Yi with a phenomenal run today, by the way, 2.638. We'll get into more of that in a bit. But that 2.638, you're then thinking, you know, he's now going to get ever closer to Farah's record. You've got Emil who's going to be knocking on the door of Farah's record. I mean, Sessman is also knocking on the door. Paddy Deva is, you know, he ran exceptionally well in New York. What's that time worth in New York if he was to run in Valencia today? So we ourselves as a nation are going to have four guys probably knocking on the door of Farah's British record. And I think that's what you're seeing in France. That's what you're seeing in Japan. That's what you're seeing in Germany. That all those European nations, you know, you're seeing three or four men. And that's why we're being spoiled by so many national records. And it seems like every marathon, every half, every 10K, you load up and some form of a national record goes. But it's by different people. It's not, there's not this one outstanding athlete and you're relying on them to be in PB shape every single time. And I think that's why, they're just so consistent. But that, of course, you know, once someone starts to put, I mean, Petros today, by the way, Aminal Petros, I mean, he's had a phenomenal year, three marathons, obviously bouncing back off that very difficult world champs in extreme conditions, runs 2:04:03 today. I thought he was going to crack 2:04 for a minute, the way he closed out. And, you know, you'd think he's starting to put, you know, that German national record out of touch now. And, you know, so I think we will, in the next couple of years, I think it will start to slow, but I think we've still got a flurry ahead.
Yeah, I think you're right, mate. And I think, like you mentioned, that kind of magical 2:05 barrier, we might see one, maybe two Brits kind of break that in the next few years. But after that, they're not all going to be shooting for it. They're not all going to be kind of around that 2:06 like they are with the 2:06, 2:07 mark. A couple will kind of push ahead and that maybe be it. But yeah, back on Petros, mate, like that's just a ridiculous season. And 5-10 years ago, that's unheard of. To go, what was he, 8th in London, silver at a world champs, and then 12 weeks after the world champs, like you say, a ridiculously hard world champs as well, comes and runs 2:04 in Valencia. Is he going to have a rest now, or will we see him back in London, you know, because they'll want a game. They get the best fields they can, and they'll now want him, and he'll be a wanted man, and how do you say no to that?
He got quicker and quicker. What I love about Petros, I mean, he got fractionally quicker. He's actually very consistent, but he's still, you know, he was 62:40 halfway. So he's still negative split very nicely. You know, and it was a very, very aggressive last. Specifically, his last sort of K was very, very impressive. But what I like about Petros is he is a racer. And I think that showed at the world champs, like he seems to thrive in these sort of like head to head battles he gets himself in. And, you know, saw that today, like he was being dragged through with a couple guys. He enjoyed hunting men down. And I think everyone does. You gain confidence in those situations, but he still comes out on top. Whoever he's with, he always comes out on top. He was able to put Cabral away and those two work together for a long period of time. You know, like I said, was almost rewarded with a sub 2:04. I think he'll definitely need a rest. Like to see him shoot for London now might be, I think he might eye up the Europeans and look to potentially win there. But, you know, there were a few Europeans in the race today who were a little disappointing. And, you know, Kripa was one of them. No, given, you know, how strong he can be over the marathon. And again, like in those sort of more tactical marathons, he's always impressed. But yeah, he was a lot further down the field today.
Yeah, and I think it just shows you the importance of preparation and planning for which group you go with, because Petros today, like, yes, he's had an amazing race. Like, that's probably the best he could have done, but he's also never winning that race with someone like John Carreer in, because he's gone off with a second group. Equally, Kripa, if Kripa goes off with group three, and the group with Yi in, that Carreer's obviously paced, and we'll chat about that, maybe he comes through and runs 2:05. For example, but he's gone with group two. It was massive. So they did have a nice, easy ride for those of them that could hang with it. But it just gets to the point where if it's slightly too quick, then you're long gone. And I think if he did go with group three, he probably looks back and then thinks, oh, I was never going to run quick enough anyway, because obviously he's already run decently fast. So I guess you do have to pop yourself into the advanced one. But someone like you has seen the benefits of going off fairly conservatively. But I guess the next time he goes into a race, if he wants to improve on that, he has to then go to the next group, and then that's when you basically blow up big time.
Yeah, I feel like it does get very difficult around that sort of 2:05, 2:06 mark, because that is, you know, he's run 2:06:38 in the best way possible today. Mm. He's obviously had Sessman to key off. He's had a mill to key off. Emil, when I was following on the track, he's took those boys to 25 miles pretty much. I'm pretty sure.
He went through the split.
Yeah, he was still in the race at 20, maybe 23, 24 miles. So I was thinking he may as well finish. He may as well go run two. He's not far off his PB as it is.
Mm.
He may as well just drill the last couple of miles and finish this thing off. But he did step off.
Does it influence your paycheck if you're a pacer?
Well,
I think it does. I think he's
getting anything because he's pacing Alex Yee and Phil Sesman. The organizers wouldn't care about that. They wouldn't be like, oh yeah, you know, take care of. He might be getting something.
Was he not pacing might be in.
Did you see a pacing vest on him, did you?
I thought, unless that's just the new kit. He was in something orange anyway.
Well, if he was sort of, I guess, yeah, an official pacer, then, I thought he might be in there. But, if he was official pacer, he's definitely been paid. But that seems strange to me that they were sort of hire official pacers in a race like Valencia when you've got people running 2-2 and you know, you'd hire a pacer for 2-7. But
yeah, I could be wrong, mate. I could be wrong.
I suppose you've,
much of them, did we, in terms of like on the footage?
I didn't see much of them at all. I didn't see much at all.
From the back, it looked like the pacing vest, but that could be an equally orange Adidas vest or whatever.
But I was thinking he may as well finish that off and, you know, get a nice bit of confidence. Like the damage, by the time you get to sort of 24 miles, 23 miles even, the damage of the race is pretty much been done then. You know, if you pull out a 20, I think that, you know, obviously that last 10K is quite a big difference. But it's good to see that he was able to, I mean, he would have been helping those boys out, just dragging those boys through. So it was actually pretty encouraging to see Emil, if he's in this sort of shape now, when he gets ready and gets it right, he's going to be able to pop. You know, Yee went on to run 206.38. You know, what could Emil do? But you are right. It's that horrible point where, you know, 206.38 for Yee, if it was me, I would just keep running marathons the way he executed today. You know, I would, obviously you would go off maybe a little, just a tiny bit quicker than you did today. And you'd try and get through halfway slightly quicker than you did. What was his heart? What were they halfway again? It was like 63 and a half. Also, he was bang on 207, right? It's pretty much bang on. And so, you know, you would probably go, well, can I run 63.15 at halfway, but still negative split, and then knock on the door of 20, you know, that 206 barrier. But yeah, I think it's very difficult when you start going sub 63 through that first half. That's a whole different race altogether. And that's why we see so many of these. It's why we see so many of these Ethiopians in Kenya. They just pop. They pop big time. They wound up in, you know, running 208 and stuff. So you can come by a lot of those. And for him to finish seventh today as well in a marathon like Valencia, that is an incredible result.
Yeah. And I think he's exceeded everyone's expectations. I mean, maybe not everyone, but me and you for sure. I remember when we spoke about him debuting in London. We kind of expected him to run similar to what he did, that 2:11 mark, I think he was obviously in the end, and maybe thought that a sub 2:10 would be like outrageous for him, but he's shown his true class. And because there's a difference between being someone who has the potential to be like truly world class as a youngster who then moves to triathlon, and then being world class as a senior after having, I know that he's obviously, look, he's running, he's cycling, he's swimming. I'm not saying he's not been doing training, but it is a different sport. And to come back and to be able to run 206 is ridiculous.
I think this is it for Yee now. Yeah. I think he's going to enjoy the challenge. Now, I think he's going to want to go. Yeah. He's going to want to go to 2028
Olympics, and he has to try and go medal. That's the trajectory.
Hold your horses, mate. But yeah, I think.
As in try, I'm not saying he's going to. But I'm saying,
yeah.
If you won the Olympics, he's literally the Olympic champ. He's got three Olympic medals, right? One team, two individuals, silver and gold, right? So the only thing you can go do now that's like, yeah, he makes a team for sure. If he locks in and focuses on it, he will make that team. So of course he's going to go try a medal. In the same way, like, look, Emil's going to go try a medal. So why can't Alex Yee? He's just around 2-6.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I think he will.
Yeah,
but
I think, yeah, I do agree with you. That should be his goal. That should be his goal, I suppose. Yeah, to have run that today, you know, and we're 2.5 years out from LA. I just think, yeah, he's got to now commit. But I think what I think is very interesting with Yee, obviously he's got a great YouTube series, and you know, he has done, you know, him and his team have just done a phenomenal job in balancing the cycling, the running, even the swimming. Like, he is still keeping up all of that work that he does to triathlon. Yes, not to quite the same extent, but, you know, he really has, you know, cracked it. I don't know anyone who's run 206 in that training in that way. You know, so he's a trailblazer. He is discovering new ways to reach that level. And the problem is, though, you know, because he's done it for life, you know, what he can do on a bike, what he can do in the pool is just far superior to anyone else. Like, and so the problem is, if you're an athlete and you're like, oh yeah, you know, there are huge, I do look at his training, I'm like, there's huge advantages. He's just not putting the same impact to his muscles. You know, his muscles must just be a lot fresher. Sort of, you know, although he's getting huge amounts of volume in his muscles, you know, when it comes to an event like the marathon, his muscles must be so much fresher than someone like Sesman, who's having to do virtually the same hours, but he's doing it all on feet.
And like you say though, mate, he's good enough on the bike and good enough in the pool to achieve the right training stimulus.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
In relation to his running. Whereas, look, Suguru Sarko, we'll talk about him in a bit, like fourth.
Absolutely.
Suguru goes and jumps on a bike, right? It's not going to be the same. Look, maybe he does. I'm not aware that he does. But you say he's a trailblazer. I mean, you talk about people on YouTube, right? Cole Hocker doing not to the same level. So much cycling as well to do these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's different event group.
A little bit cross training. Yeah.
They go on long rides on a Sunday. Yeah.
I think it's more accepting in the mid distance though. You know, because I think there is like
top up, aren't they?
Yeah, they're just doing it for a top up. Like, whereas, you know, and I think that's why you see so few marathoners do any forms of cross training, because they're so focused on building up that muscle conditioning, being able to handle that impact. You know, so I do think he is. And yeah, it's an incredible feat what he's achieved. So credit to him. And it was a very, very quick close as well. You know, he was running with Sesman. And we've got to talk about Sesman, because 2:07.11 from him. I mean, that is, you know, fraction quicker than what he ran in Amsterdam. And he has run two marathons in a short space of time. And yeah, fair play to Sesman. And, you know, that is really good. And I wonder if he'll look at that now and go, was two marathons in 8 weeks? And I guess he's come away faster on the second one. He's bettered his PB once again. He's now down on, you know, he is running phenomenally well. But whether he'll look at that and go, did I need to do the two marathons? Or could I have just done the one and maybe just gone into it a little fresh? Because I do know he was sort of after Amsterdam, he had to have a little bit of obviously time off. Not time off, but, you know, back off a bit. And then he was ill for a little bit as well. So did that hinder his preparations? He'd probably argue no, because he still ran faster. But, you know, when you're looking for those extra sort of 10, 15 seconds, could he have got a bit more out of himself? And I guess he'll analyze and review that.
It's an interesting approach, mate, isn't it? Because I think his rationale is that
he does a hard long one.
So long a build up
that
you may as well get two races out of it. In my opinion, if you nail the first one like he did, you're not going to run quicker, or like, as in, like, you're going to run marginally quicker like he did today, because you can't.
I think a lot of that's the course. Valencia is a better course.
So running the same time is a positive. But then why do the next one if you nail the first one? Because actually now he's 8 weeks behind where he would have been in his prep for his next one, had he just rested after Amsterdam. And obviously today, look, as far as we know anyway, no injuries, nothing, no issues. But the injury risk from training for this and the race today is surely far greater than had he just stopped. I get it if you have a great build-up and then you mess up on the day, and he ran 2:12, right, in Amsterdam, to come here and actually make the most of the shape he had because you got a little bit ill on the week of the race. Like, get that, having been prepped to go and do two. But if you nail the first one like he did, the best case scenario is like you did today and you run 10 seconds quicker, but who really cares?
I think, well, 10 seconds is 10 seconds, you know.
Maybe his ASICS bonus was 2:07.15, so he needed to.
Yeah, I mean, there is the fact that, you know, he's probably picked up a bit of money from doing two as well, but he's also just an incredibly robust athlete.
Mm.
Do you know what? There is an element of, like, if you can race at that level consistently, then why not? You know,
the chances are. It's not a criticism necessarily.
No. I agree. And yeah, I've got no doubt that we'll see him in London as well. So, you know, he will. I mean, what's London? 16 weeks away, maybe just over. So, you know, I probably imagine that he's going to turn around for that. Or will he now just sort of prepare for the Europeans and try and compete at the European Championship Marathon? Will he bypass London? Because he's definitely put himself in the driving seat. What will Alex Yee do at the Europeans? Will he want to do a championship marathon? You know, when we talk about 2028, it's probably Europeans is probably a perfect chance to get the experience of a championship marathon. The standard's a little less. Mm-hmm. Ron, you know, you're on home soil. People would go nuts for that. Because 2027, the world champs is in China, isn't it? You might just, that's probably a year where, to be honest, they're all going to have to get quicker. Because, you know, the standard was, 2630, is it? Or going to be the future standard, 2630. So, you know, they're all, even you today, 2638, they're going to need to get quicker if they want to qualify. If the standards are going to be at same insane level in the marathon, they're going to need to step up. So 2027 is almost the year that you want to focus on chasing a quick one and potentially get that experience in 2026. So we'll see how they get on. Ed Chez just behind Sessman. Nice running from him. Johnny Mellor, 208.45. That is a very, very strong run. We had Ben Connor, 210-ish. We had Jack Rowe a little further down. But I think for Jack, it was important to get this one finished. I mean, we talked about Yee going 211, to 210, 211, and then obviously down on 206. And the jump he can make just from that first marathon, just from understanding what he needed to go away and do in training, how he needed to change things. And Rowe, 212.33, and sort of sets off conservatively enough, but continue to just get, you know, just a fraction slower, you know, throughout the race. So,
hey, the big question though on Instagram, is it his debut? Was it his debut or was it not?
Well, to be fair to,
I agree.
Media rep, I think, I'm just checking Jake Barraclough as well, because he's pulled out. Yeah, he's pulled out. Well, his clock's still going. Guy's still saying he's 3 hours 44 on the clock, but I think he pulled out, so not his day either. But no, I think, you know, that's Rowe's first marathon complete, which is a start for his marathon journey.
It is, and never going to be easy. Just as someone like Mark Scott's seen, right? I think we don't have any doubts that Jack Rowe has potential in the marathon. He certainly does. He's just got to wait for the right one and wait for the training to click, like perfect. And yeah, he's in a great place to do it. Obviously, training with Paddy and things like that. So his setup seems to be ready made. Yeah, we'll just wait and see.
Women's race, Jocelyn Cheprakoski gets the win. Now this was interesting, mate. You know, you've got quite strong opinions on actually how this victory played out, and it is worth saying to win Valencia, it was $75,000 in prize money, and that dropped to about, I think it was $50,000 for second. So.
Yeah,
there's a lot of money on the line here as well. And it was, yeah, for me, it didn't really sit right, but I'll let you break it
down.
Yeah,
it should be a bit of the pacing, like, issue. And I think I say issue, but they didn't really make much of it on the comms, but kind of watching it this morning, I was just thinking, is this fair? Like Matt's saying, so obviously Perez's pacer drops out. She then makes a bit of a surge forwards and Cheprakoski's pacer stays in, brings her back level. And then essentially the one male pacer, so they had one each to start with, like private pacers, so not part of the race. They had their own individual pacemaker, so I presume paid for by an agent or whoever, or themselves.
Maybe
they know them from the same training group, whatever it is. Maybe they train together, right? Maybe it could be training pacers. I don't know the context. But one stays in, and he basically then makes all the moves, drags Cheprakoski through, and he peels off 100 meters before the finish. And so don't get me wrong, I think it's great that we can have, like, get the women running these, like, supreme times, because they have that option. They have the option of having these male pacers. But I think the difference that it made, having one stay in till right at the end and one drop out with maybe 10K to go, 10K to go, perhaps. Don't quote me on that. But it just seems to have completely, completely changed the race. And it meant that Cheprakoski's not even thinking about when to make a move, how to pull back, how to pull away. She's just one foot in front of the other, whereas Perez Jepchirchir gets to 10K to go, and then she has a real race on her hands after a pacer taking her through 20 miles, which I think is the idea of a pacemaker, right? Is to take them through like a decent amount at the right pace and then let the race unfold. That's historically...
Well, I do think it needs policing. I think it's time.
It needs to be some sort.
It's time for it to be policed and have rules where the pacer needs to pull off. The pacer needs to be out the race when the race gets going. I appreciate like you said, it's there, you know, especially when we're obsessed with records and meet directors are obsessed with records. But yeah, how that played out just shouldn't be allowed. Mm. He had a huge influence on the race and he changed the result. You know, and maybe that the outcome would
maybe
the
result's the same, but it definitely influenced how it played out. And imagine on the track, right? Like, say, Faith Kipyegon's out in front going for a record, but then, like, I don't know, Georgia Bell, right?
Bataclete's got a bloke in front of
her. Just drags her back through.
There's no racing. There's no racing. It's so bad. And, you know, poor Perez is like making moves, surging for what? Like, she, you know, and obviously Jossi Trzaskowska is a fantastic, I mean, they're both incredible athletes. But yeah, I think that is very, very frustrating. And, you know, I do think when it comes to marathons, you know, the best of the best, you know, those boys at the front, they don't get a pacer. Even a mil pacing today to 22, 23, 24 mark. Like, for me, that's too far in the race. You know, I think there needs to be an element, like, and this is why the marathon is just becoming just a lot more achievable. Times are getting quicker and quicker because people aren't, they're not left out there to do it anymore.
No.
And I think that's, it is, I think it's just a bit of a shame. Like, it just takes away the wow factor of some of these performances now. You know, I think paces in marathons should go no further than 20 miles, no further than 20 miles. Because I think that last test, like, that's where the racing steps in. That's where you've got to be able to get the job done yourself. Like, and that's what you train for. And I think they just shouldn't be involved in the race. They shouldn't have that impact.
I'd just love to see like some more marathons with no pacers, like outside of the majors.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
The guys at the front, never. The guys at the front.
Majors, right, throughout. So say we have like six pace majors and six non-pace majors. Or even our trials, right? I know they all want to go to London and run quick. But like, let's just put on a trials race where we've just got the 30 best Brits, men and women. Just let them race. See what happens.
No, I agree. Talking of trial races, mate, Alicia Vino of Finland, mate, 2:20 today, another national record for her. But she did run 2:23 at the Finnish Championships in October. So you talk about turnarounds. 4th of October, I think that was. 8 weeks later, you know, this is like, that's assessment. 8 weeks later, out here ripping, ripping Valencia Marathon, 2:20, and also Chloe Herbier of Belgium, 2:20:38. I bet that girl in Copenhagen. And she, what is she running in Copenhagen? 71 minutes. 71 minutes in Copenhagen back end of September for a half. And she runs 2:20 today. I don't think she's broken 70 for a half. It's outrageous. Yeah. What'd you say?
Off the Belgian record, yeah.
Yeah. And she is a class act. Like, she won the European Road Running Champs. Like, she's a class act. But still, you know, two Europeans in the 2:20s. Jess Stenson of Australia, 2:21. African Glenrose Zaba, 2:23. Izzy Batdoll, 2:23. So it was stacked. And first Brit home, mate, Natasha
Top
Wilson.
Top 10 as well. 10th place.
10th place. 2:24. I think that's prize money. I think she'll pick up a couple thousand for 10th there. 2:24 for Wilson.
Checking the all-time rankings, mate. So that will take her.
There's a lot.
8th on the rankings. She's ahead of Ailish.
Yeah. There's a huge
head of Ailish, head of Jess Jard.
It's going to be a headache picking that. Just behind Donnelly, yeah. I was going to say that, yeah. So I guess you've got what? Purdue and Thackeray and
Hallie, Purdue.
Yeah.
You got
obviously like Paul and Maher. So, but very, very impressive from Wilson. Lily Partridge, 2:27 as well, 55. And then beyond that, to be fair, like, you know, we just, again, like on the men's side, you know, people just struggle. They just don't get it right on the day, and it's not for everyone. You know, Valencia is one of those ones where it's either, I feel like no one has like sort of that mediocre run. It's either like go shatter your PB or you kind of walk away disappointed. And I think, you know, there's one reason Valencia is for that.
It's part of the magic of the race, right? That everyone goes there, and it's a bit like a Boston indoors that you don't go to Valencia to consolidate. Well, unless you're Emil Caress, right? And you just decide for a 35K long run there. I mean, you must like the city, and the course. But I think, yeah, you don't go there to consolidate. You go there to absolutely take chunks off your PB. But in doing that, it means that everyone going into the race is running on the red line, beyond the red line. So you're gonna get some bodies out there when it doesn't quite go to plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you really are. Wow, just seeing a few videos and pictures of you there. Very cool. Very, very cool. So, mate, let's, I mean, that was Valencia. So for me, actually, the biggest news in the running world this week was not really Valencia. It was a good watch today. There were some great performances, but, you know, I think outshined kind of as always by Boston for me. I mean, Josh Hoey last night, 1:12.84 for 600, sets the world record, just missed the outdoor world record as well by like 300th of a second. Just off Johnny Gray, so he almost thrashed that. And he looks so good. He went 47.7 at 400. He was 23.9 pretty much. His brother, who was pacing him, gets in his way. I think it was 300, maybe 400. His brother is moving out, and Josh Hoey is also trying to overtake him. It cost him the all-time world record. It did.
He must have had a bet on it. A little family rivalry.
Mate, he lost easily, I reckon, you know, probably 0.5 of a second easy. Like, it was one of those ones where he didn't quite collide, but definitely his brother gets in his way. He has to then go wider to get round him. And then obviously he took off that sort of, held it together that last 225, I think it was 25-0 or something. But it was just insane. Like, he hammered around there. And to do that in December, I mean, I know he didn't go to the world, but flipping hell.
Yeah. And mate, he's now got the American indoor 800, 600, and the 150
record. Well, is he an indoor specialist?
Elliot Giles.
Time will tell. But also coming out of Boston, mate, George Cootey, 736 in the 3000. How about it? And yeah, what's that? Fifth or something all time? Looked
very good.
Worth
not going to the European Cross for?
Worth not going to European Cross for, I mean. Well, in Cootey's case, I do think so, mate. Like, he's going to have big goals. He's going to try and, you look at, well, this is the thing, right?
That's what you need, isn't it? Like, it's the confidence you need and
I think financially.
I think
for his career financially and obviously his development, I guess he, at the end of the day, he's going to be a track specialist. He's going to be a 1500 specialist. Maybe, I mean, 736, maybe. He'll be a Cole Hocker. You know, he's following Cole Hocker's trajectory. He's got a perfect case study. Nailed the 3K 15 and like as an NCAA star, and then go do the job over the 5000. But when you look at
his cross country pedigree as well, it's better.
It's cross pedigrees. Yeah, he's probably in for a filthy five. I got him. But you look at Jane Hendegrim. The BYU star runs 14:44 yesterday, like absolutely, you know, beats Doris Lemongoli, who won the NCAA's like cross steep, you know, steeple star, sub 9 minute steepler. She ran 14:52, and you look at the Hendegren, and you just go, Ines Fitzgerald is that? Like, Ines Fitzgerald is the same, pretty much the same age, run the same time over 5K, performed in the Diamond League, but Hendegren being one American. Two setting records in the NCAA.
Yeah.
Like, she will be probably earning on these Neil deals, and her, whatever her future contract is going to be, will be. And you're not in it for the money, right? But, you know, athletics, there isn't much money, so you can take the money. Ines will be on a good deal, but this girl will be on triple. I have no.
She's being based in the US, yeah.
Based in the US, but she's getting, in the NCAA, she's getting so much exposure. Like, so much hype, so much coverage. You know, whereas Ines came fourth in the Diamond League, and like, there was bar, you know, a few British media outlets getting very excited. There was probably no one even can recollect that race. Whereas this girl's, she's sitting,
this is what stalls the Americans when they get to major champs, to be fair. It's what stalls the Americans when they get to the major champs, because they've got a full sense of security.
Because they get so hyped. Yeah.
In college and on the domestic circuit.
Yeah. King Park of Albi's records, you know, not a million miles off Elise Cranning's American record of 14:33. Yeah, Boston delivered in the five as well. Lads running in the men's five. Obviously, Gary Martin was like, I think 13:06 or something. Samuel 13:05. So another very, very deep 5K as well on the men's side.
It's mad. It's like become such a normal thing for people just to be spanking times indoors in December.
Yeah. It's
why wouldn't you?
Well, they can enjoy their Christmas now, right? It's a big advantage, but
they can't, because they're coming out all guns blazing in January.
Yeah. There's no time to settle. But it shows you, you know, obviously I just always think this indoor meet is quite interesting because it kind of shows you the fitness that they have off the back of an NCAA cross and like the sort of shape you have to be in to perform at an NCAA cross. And on that topic, we'll move on to the men's, to the men's and women's US cross champs. They had their trial for the World Cross this weekend. And Rocky Hansen, who obviously got second behind Haptam Samuel at the NCAA cross, he gets second, beats studs, like beats Nico Young, beats Graham Blanks, beats all these boys. Parker Wolf wins. And, you know, Parker Wolf is only just removed from the NCAA cross. He's been very in touch with it. Obviously, Graham Blanks as well. But yeah, Rocky Hansen as well, and it kind of shows the form that he's in to be able to put these insane pros like, you know, Wesley Kiptoo, Nicky Young, Graham Blanks, put all of these boys away by some distance as well, like sort of 20, good, almost 30 seconds. Yeah, beat Blanks by what? 20 seconds, actually. Beat Blanks and Nicky Young by 20 seconds, which is very impressive. So that's America's team. So America's men's team, Parker Wolf, Rocky Hansen, Wesley Kiptoo, Ahmed Mohamed, Nico Young, Graham Blanks. They're the six of what's called in America top six. They're just on the plane. Well, on the bus to Tallahassee. And then the women's race, Wene Kalati, Katie Izzo, Edna Kerga, obviously NCAA, used to be an NCAA cross star, Carissa Schweitzer, Emily Venters, and Grace Hartman.
Yeah, and then in their short course, mate, as well, some absolute studs. Obviously, Ethan Strand takes the win over in the 2K, followed by Wes Porter, and then in the women's, Grace Morris, and then Sage Herter-Klecker. Make up their relay team, if you like.
Parker Valby in 10th in a women's race. So her post-collegiate career, not going so well just yet. Obviously, a lot of injuries and stuff like that. So, but yeah, mate, I think that's, to be honest, other than maybe, am I allowed to preview some Friday Night Under Lights entries? There's one in December, right? 5 mile race in December, and it is looking very good. There's names such as Jack Cavanaugh, Joe Wigfield, Jake Whiteman is on the list. James Kingston is on the list. And there's reports saying the boys might try and attack a British 5 mile record in Battersea Park on the 19th of December. So there is that to look forward to.
Yeah, and that's a nice segue into recommending last weekend's episode, right? Mr. Jake Whiteman, on with his coach, John Hartigan. So if you missed that one, make sure you check it out. Matt sat down with the two of them to chat about an amazing summer, kind of, I guess, re-cementing Whiteman's love for competing on the big stage and making him really realize that he's probably only got maybe two more champs in him. He's got to make the most of it and see how many more medals he can add to his collection.
Absolutely. Enjoy that one, folks. And we'll be back with European cross country preview on midweek for the Eurocross preview, because obviously that is next weekend. That will be huge. So we'll be breaking down those league fields. Entries are out, by the way, just been studying them. And obviously there's been, I guess, the big news from the Eurocross is that actually people are dropping out rather than us getting super excited about all the big names. The big names are dropping out. Gressier is going to decide if he is doing it after today. You've got Jakob, who's pulled out. Almgren's not on the list. Isaac Camelli's pulled out, unfortunately. So that top 10 might be looking very, very different to next year. So some of our Brits, I think, will be
quite pleased with that, I think.
Quite pleased, and we'll be able to try and get amongst it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, enjoy looking forward to that one. Enjoy this episode. Enjoy Whiteman, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone. smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.